With us this morning, we have the honour of having the Honourable Winston Peters, Deputy Prime Minister of New Zealand, with us. Tēnā koe, Winston.
Kia ora.
Kia ora. So this is not Dale, you may have noticed. This is Hiniani, and normally I line up people for Dale to speak to, but he's at a very important conference, so he'll be back tomorrow. But thank you for talking to us. It was a sad day at Parliament yesterday.
It was truly a sad day because of the, not just of the sadness of a Member of Parliament like Ofiso passing away, but in the manner in which it happened at a charity and no pre-notice or warning. So Parliament was quite seriously shocked, and I think a lot of people outside of politics would have been as well.
Yes, he was very active in the South Auckland community and in the radio station itself. Ourselves, we were very shocked. He's spoken with us, you know, for many years, and has been seen as a shining example of the future of the Pacific in Auckland.
I think, yes, the sadness of it all is that he has just delivered his maiden speech. He has been less than 3 months in Parliament. And unfortunately, he and for his family, this tragedy has happened. So we'll never know what the possibilities were. But there are a lot of things about his approach and his past which are beacons for many younger people, particularly Pacific people. So I think there's something, despite the absolute tragedy, nevertheless for us to celebrate.
It is. Yeah, thank you. So the Prime Minister gave a State of the Nation speech calling New Zealand fragile in what seemed to be all a doom and gloom, don't you think? Does the Coalition Government have the answers?
Well, first of all, if anyone thinks that our situation is not fragile, they're not looking hard enough. We've had all these circumstances compounded by a blowout in expenditure, inflation, cost of living crisis, lawlessness and homelessness, and people concerned about delivery of health. All those things have been exacerbated by international circumstances as well. So it's a very fragile circumstance we're living in. But when you say, has the Coalition got the answers? Well, the answers are not going to be, how shall I say, something we can provide overnight. But we've got to set out to turn the situation around, as our country has done in former times, with far less resources to be able to do that than we've got today. We just have got to better organise a far greater contribution from a much bigger percentage of New Zealanders in our recovery on our way back to being a world-leading economy. Now, you know, we used to be there once, right up the first two or three. And in achievement at universities and schools as well, particularly at the schooling level, when it came to literacy and numeracy, we're right up there. But all these things have fallen away dramatically of late. And as you know, looking just at them, many of these things can be solved simply by a change, refocus in education priorities, and above all, young students, pupils, turning up at school. I went to a Maori school. The idea that you would have 50, 60% truancy, or even 10% truancy was just outrageous. And what happened to us? And it was much more difficult to get the school back then. 27 or 35 of students would be riding to school. That's how difficult it was. So let's have some honesty and get our country back on track, so to speak, in that context.
Well, up north, they instigated a drive to get students back, particularly Māori students, back to school, and it seemed to have worked, but it was very localised and very targeted. Is that more of what we need?
Yeah, precisely. Targeted everywhere. Go through the schools and say, what is happening here? And target their community. It's not, you know, you need an approach that, of course, it's a nationwide focus, but locally, there'll be reasons why it's happening, but the percentage of 50% plus not attending school regularly is just a signpost for a disastrous future where that young student has been missing out and our economy and our society misses out as well.
Yes, we do. Hey, so what are you focusing on at the moment as Deputy Prime Minister?
I'm focusing on watching what's going on and being quite careful and as attentive as possible at Cabinet and other meetings so policy doesn't go off track, so that we keep on focusing what we're meant to do. And then with where my portfolios are concerned, we've got to do much better internationally in terms of our relations and also our trading arrangements, so we beef up our exports. And it's work like that. I'm working with Todd McClay, the Minister for Overseas Trade, Minister for Trade, on those things. So we've got a big, huge program coming forward. But in the essence of things, we are really saying there's a colossal waste of public expenditure in this country. And in the areas where there's need, there's not enough money to spend. So we've got to change those things around. And we've been the victim of experiment in many cases, you know.
Mm.
I mean, how on earth could we have spent $1.2 billion on a thing called Three Waters? Now, this is a colossal amount of money. How on earth could they have wasted on that? Forget if you believe in Three Waters or not, but at the end of it, they've spent that much money, and this program policy is not even in place yet. How on earth could they have spent that sort of money? It's just birthday. $54 million on the cycleway over the Harbour Bridge that never got going. And hundreds and hundreds of millions on light rail, which never had not 1 meter being built. You'd almost think this is daylight robbery, but we're told, oh, it's all legitimate. Personally, I can't believe it. I cannot understand how you get rid of that sort of money without there's something utterly and totally corrupt going on.
Or incompetent.
Well, yeah, that's an innocent excuse. But you think, even if you're incompetent, you couldn't spend that sort of money, could you?
No. So, talking about Three Waters, you know, we're looking at a mess in terms of water already run by the councils. What is the solution you think that the coalition party is presenting to councils now that will help them navigate the mess that they're already in terms of water and restructure, make sure that, you know, New Zealand water has a strong infrastructure?
Well, ask yourself this. Was this screaming out at people 10 years ago?
Yep.
Was it 20 years ago everybody shouting this out at local body level? No. How did this matter creep up on us? When it comes to Auckland, you go and look at Watercare. Watercare has done a pretty good job. Everybody knows their resources are pretty good, and they don't want anybody else poking their nose in and taking them off them, so to speak, or spitting them up or sharing them out. So a lot of councils are on top of this problem, and many are not. But to call it a global sort of nationwide problem is not quite correct. But again, I say this. Is this issue all of a sudden a big issue when it wasn't 10, 15, 20 years ago? We've always had water problems, and over the years we've had it all over the country. But it's part of the council's obligations and responsibilities. Now, if we are to find more resources for the councils to meet those obligations, then so be it. But please don't have us tell us all of a sudden that we've got a water crisis, when in fact, in many parts of the country, we've not. We've just got a badly focused local body expenditure budget, so to speak, spending a lot of money on things that nobody does, nobody needs, but they love. Go downtown Auckland. Look, can I ask you this question? Why is Auckland so anti-business, so anti-car, so anti-visitor, that when you go there, you think, this is not a street anymore that I want to see? The poor shopkeepers are being hounded out of the operations. It's absolutely lost all its focus, and the city of sales has become the city of snails. Now, why don't we get back to fixing those things up?
Oh, totally, totally. And it's dangerous. It's, you know, I don't want to walk down Queen Street even during the day, let alone in the evening on your way home to catch a train.
Well, it's breathtaking. You know, I look back at my life, a young lawyer working in Queen Street for the biggest law firm in the country. The whole place was alive. It was the financial capital of New Zealand. And all of a sudden, because of people with no right, no mandate, no electoral permission, they've dramatically changed the city far for the worse. They never get to be found out for who they are. And they've taken a fortune doing it while they've screwed the rest of our lives up. That's what I think about it. And I'm a person that spent a lot of my life in Auckland.
Hey, doesn't it come down to the lack of long-term planning? The trouble is, it looks like every time we change government, there's like a knee-jerk reaction to what the previous government does. But really, shouldn't we have a long-term plan of what we want Aotearoa New Zealand to look like?
Yes, that's true. But in Auckland's case, not the long-term planning. I mean, I've just watched over the years where some of the processes, the planning permission processes, it's outright mafia-like. If you don't do what they say, you don't get permission. And then the costs go run through the roof. They're astronomical. In the tens and tens and tens of thousands for a simple right to do something. Now, this is something that, you know, I cannot understand how a city got so confused that no one's been able to hold these people to account. But it's a very, very sad circumstance. And I, you know, feel sorry for the mayor and the present council because they're trying to fix it up. And fix it up, they better. Otherwise, you're going to ruin the financial capital of the country even worse.
Well, thank you very much for your thoughts, as always, Winston Peters. Thank you very much for speaking with me, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you very much. All the best to your listeners today.
Thank you very much. Nga mihi, kia ora.